Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is tax expert Russell Fox. His website is claytontax.com and also taxtabletalk.com. Russell Fox, welcome back to Gambling with an Edge.
It's great to be back.
We put out a lot of requests for our listeners, and they responded. We did it on both the Gambling with an Edge website, Twitter, Facebook page, and the Wizard of Vegas forum, and we got questions from a lot of those. So there was even a couple from Richard and me. All right, first question, definitely from a listener. Assume you're a professional gambler, but your income fluctuates wildly. Your net income may well be $200,000 one year and minus $50,000 the next, and then some plus amount the next. It seems to be settled tax law that you cannot carry forward losses as a professional gambler. However, is it possible to max out IRAs or maybe SEP IRAs during your plus years and cash them all in during your minus years at the lower tax rate? That's one way of deferring taxes, maybe. So it kind of works as a way to smoothing out your income stream. Is that way off base?
Well, you're always allowed to withdraw from your own IRAs, but when you withdraw from an IRA, first, it's taxable income. And second, if you're not age 59 and a half, it's generally subject to a 10% penalty tax. California will also, if you happen to be a California resident, charge you a 2.5% state penalty tax. So you're going to pay an extra 10% penalty tax to get that money out. Now, if you're over age 59 and a half, there are no penalties. You can always withdraw the IRAs without a penalty tax. There are some other conditions that allow IRA withdrawals without a penalty tax. For example, first-time home purchase. And there's some others. That's the most common one, which allows up to $10,000 to be withdrawn from an IRA. But otherwise, this isn't such a great idea because retirement accounts should be for retirement, not for smoothing out income.
But if you are 60 years old, it would work great for that.
It would work exactly as your listener said. You could take that money out. Is subject to income tax, mind you.
But you've lost, in the example, $50,000 that year. And so
you have no income yet.
So you have no income yet. So you reduce your tax burden in your plus years, and the tax kind of goes away.
Well, you're only reducing your tax burden. I mean, you're only reducing your tax burden if it's a SEP IRA or if it's a Roth, you're not reducing your tax burden. So.
Correct. A Roth IRA, of course, you can also take withdrawals of your own contributions out at any time because a Roth IRA is an after-tax IRA. And with Roth IRA withdrawals, there's an ordering system that's used. The first withdrawals are always considered to be your contributions. Since they're after tax, you didn't get a tax write-off when you put the money in. You don't get a tax when you take the money out.
But that's a small amount of money anyway.
So. Correct. But, you know, retirement accounts generally should be for retirement. That's the idea of a retirement account. But you can absolutely, if you're over age 59 and a half, take that money out at any time, not subject to a penalty tax. And if your income's low, all you're going to have, for example, if you take $10,000 out, is $10,000 of income, potentially. You may owe nothing as far as regular income tax.
All right.
You don't owe self-employment or anything on withdrawals from an IRA, do you?
No, it's not self-employment income.
Right, so you wouldn't owe anything on $10,000, right?
On $10,000, you wouldn't, assuming that's your only income. You wouldn't, other than the possible penalty tax. The penalty tax starts at zero, so any withdrawals from an IRA subject to the penalty tax will cause a tax due.
So, I mean, is there another way to skin this cat? Like, in the old days, they had income averaging, where you could, you know, mitigate some of this. Is there any new sort of version of a way to get around this very real problem that gamblers have?
No. Only if you're a farmer. Farmers still have income averaging, believe it or not. They have good lobbyists.
You can start a marijuana farm, Richard. I find it interesting that you say the purpose of the IRA is for retirement and that's what it should be used for. Our listeners are typically advantage gamblers, and we're looking for advantageous ways, not what things are designed for. So, but I digress. Let's go on. For residents of some countries, any W-2G gets 30% withheld. W-2G would be typically be on a slotter video poker jackpot of $1,200 or higher. How can these non-U.S. players get this money back?
Well, there are four ways of getting money back. The first is something which will take time, which is get better diplomats. For example, the United Kingdom, United States tax treaty exempts gambling winnings. So if you're a gambler from the United Kingdom and you have a valid ITIN, or you gamble in a casino that has the capability of either issuing an ITIN or sending the paperwork for the ITIN to the IRS, you will not have any money withheld. Whereas if you're a gambler from Canada or Brazil, there is no tax treaty, for example, between the United States and Brazil, you're going to lose that 30%. Second method is if you're from Canada. Canadians and only Canadians can claim their gambling losses on a Form 1040-NR submitted at the end of the year and get back their withheld funds based on their losses. Third method is if you're conducting a business in the U.S. You're conducting a business in the U.S. You're a professional gambler, let's say, playing the poker circuit in the United States, traveling all around, and you're spending virtually, half the year here in the U.S., you might qualify to file a business return and be subject to business income tax, though on the net income of your business. That is a possibility. However, if all you're here is for a weekend or a week, that is not going to work. This is really aimed at, for example, like a professional golfer from Brazil who's on the PGA Tour. He is conducting a business in the U.S. He's a professional golfer. And he may not be a U.S. citizen, but he needs to file a U.S. tax return based on his income. The fourth way is basically to file a Form 1040-NR claiming something that's wrong, that you can get your gambling losses back. About 5 years ago, the IRS redesigned the form. The form specifically states that you can only get gambling losses back if you're a Canadian. So today, for most people who are from countries where they have the 30% withheld, the basic way of getting it back is when you file a tax return in your home country to claim a foreign tax credit for the tax you've had withheld in the U.S. Most countries allow that. Not all, but most do. And the casino, when they have this withholding, will give you a form 1042-S that shows the withholding. And you can use that to claim a tax credit on, say, your Brazilian income tax return.
Good stuff. Thank you. I'm pretty sure we've covered this before in Russell Fox Visits, but we've had two separate questions about it recently. Assume you've earned $100 worth of cash back or free play at the casino. If you pick it up as cash, is it a taxable event? Russell.
No. It is considered a rebate. And the casino is basically giving you a marketing gift out of its profit of $100 in this situation. And it is not income, not taxable.
Wow. I've been doing it wrong.
I've been paying a lot of extra taxes over the years.
Now, that is on small dollar amounts where they're giving you free play on this. Okay? Now, if you take that free play and win money, that's taxable. In other words, the $100 base is not taxable. A lot of free play, for example, you basically get 100 credits on a slot machine.
Yeah.
Okay? That 100 credits is not taxable. However, the money you win off that 100 credits is taxable. So the 100 credits...
Oh, so if you run it through one time and cash out $100...
Now you have taxable income of $100.
No, you'd be even.
Well, no, because it's $100 if you withdraw it. If you end up... It's a technical aspect of can you take the money... For example, I'm going to go to an analogous situation in California. Some of the poker rooms in California give cash back. You play enough hours, here's $100. We appreciate your business. Commerce Casino was doing that, and they were issuing 1099s for it. And they found out that it's really not taxable. It is not income to the person. It is a rebate on the rake. Most free play is considered a rebate. So it's the play itself is not taxable. However, the winnings on the play are taxable. I know, it's splitting hairs.
So your stuff is really probably... So really, we haven't been screwing ourselves.
Yeah. Probably not.
In this case, because in my case, I've been calling it, I received $100 in income, and I played it through the machine once, and now let's say I cashed out $70, I'm calling that a $30 loss. So I have a $100 win and a $30 loss. So I'm netting $70, which is the correct amount.
That would be the correct amount. The correct amount. If you're a professional, that's probably that will work. If you're an amateur, you'd probably just want to consider it $70 of winnings. Because otherwise, when you both increase your AGI and your gambling losses, especially because some states don't allow gambling losses, you want to limit your AGI increase whenever possible.
All right. Let's do a similar yet different question. Now assume you win a drawing for $10,000. The casino gives you the choice of the money in cash, but if you take it in cash, you're going to get a 1099. Or you can take that in free play, and there's no 1099. Assuming that you're intending to file your taxes honestly, which is a heroic assumption, but is there any difference between the cash and free play tax-wise?
In this example, no, because you've won a drawing. And whether you win a drawing and are handed $10,000 in cash, $10,000 of a check, or $10,000 on a slot machine, you have gotten something of value of $10,000 and its income. And the casino should be issuing you a 1099 for it. Now, if you can cash that money out immediately, it's $10,000 on a slot machine, you go to the slot machine, push cash out, and get $10,000, that is income.
Well, let me offer a counter argument. If you're filing as a professional, well, first of all, you're going to lose whatever, 0.5% running it through the machine one time, which is not a lot. But that is income and subject to self-employment tax. Is the 1099 you win in a drawing subject to the self-employment tax?
Generally, no.
So it would be better to take the cash.
Yeah, generally, when you win a drawing, it's like a sweepstakes. You're the lucky person who happened to be, you know, the 10,000th customer. So here's a check for $10,000. Or I've appeared on a game show a long, long time ago, and I won a washer and dryer, and I got a 1099 for that washer and dryer.
You didn't get a case of Chef Boyardee?
I got something worse, if you really want to know the other parting gifts. But
Lee Press-On nails?
A year's supply of Life cereal.
Oh. Sometimes it was Rice-A-Roni. So. But so anyway, then actually it would be better to take the $10,000 because you wouldn't have the self-employment tax.
Well, the other problem, though, is now that we've said this, the question is why did you earn this prize drawing? Okay, and the question is, if it's earned as part of your play as a professional gambler, it can be considered additional professional gambling income.
But if they draw your ticket out of a drum...
That's a random drawing, and it's just other income.
Yeah,
okay. Sweepstakes income. And it is not business income. Business income is where, you know, your normal day-to-day activity to earn a living. This is random luck where you happen to be, it's not part of your business, just happen to be the lucky person who won $10,000.
Oh, I think it is part of your business. But because you wouldn't...
Well, but you don't have to call it such.
But you would not have been in that casino playing were it not for the 0.3% or whatever number you figured out that the drawing tickets are worth.
Luckily for me, I can always go to the answer. It's based on your facts and circumstances.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that means he's ready for a different question. We've received several questions about cruises. First question, it says, I file as a professional using Schedule C on my United States tax return. I recently went on a cruise, and I'm curious about what could or could not qualify as legitimate Schedule C business expenses. A search on the internet did show some results which indicate not a lot of eligible expenses, but those guidelines seem to be more applicable to your typical business person who may use the cruise for a convention meeting or a training place. I would think the situation may be different for a professional gambler, especially if time and effort are expended scouting and or playing on the ship, and or is used as a means of transport to location at or near port of call where scouting and or playing is intended and or actual. So we'll start with that question.
Well, if a professional gambler goes on a cruise for business, not on a vacation with your wife or whatever, it absolutely can be deducted. However, there is a regulation limiting deductions on what are called luxury water travel events, which is a cruise. And that limit in 2016 was between $688 and $872 per day. The limit varies by month. So let's say you took a cruise in July 2016 for 10 days, and it cost $8,000. We'll assume this cruise was for business purposes and is otherwise deductible. The limit in July 2016 was $700 a day. Thus, your deduction would be $7,000. And that's the rule. The rule, because this rule is very specific, and specific trumps general in the tax code, you are limited to this maximum dollar amount for cruises. Additionally, it's only the business portion. So if, you know, let's say you took a 20-day cruise, 10 days is complete vacation, and 10 days is business. You are gambling in the casino on the cruise ship, or otherwise can justify it as a business expense, then you would be only able to deduct 10 days worth of the cruise.
Okay. Different question about cruises, which actually may be about comps. Let's say you play enough to earn a free cruise, where the word free is in quotation marks, where you have to pay, say, $600 in taxes, port fees, and gratuities in order to get this free cruise. Assume the cruise has a retail cost of $2,500 plus those same $600 in fees. Is there any part of this free cruise that is taxable?
Well, again, it will depend on what the cruise is used for and why you earned it. If you are given a free cruise in a random drawing, it is taxable. It is just like you being the lucky person who had that $10,000 ticket being pulled. You had a $2,500 ticket being pulled, and you owe tax on it. You have wealth that you just got worth $2,500, and so that would be taxable. If, however, you're using the cruise for business, then you would have $2,500 that's taxable, and then $2,500 as a deduction. It would go both in and out.
Okay. What if it's like the free play, where the casino is just giving it to you because you're a good customer?
If you can justify it, it's a question now of comps and what value of a comp is taxable. The general rule is if it's something small, you're given a free dinner or you're given a night stay, usually that's not taxable, it's a marketing gift. But you're given a Porsche, you know, something worth $100,000, that's taxable. And a cruise, unfortunately, falls in the middle. When you're dealing with something with a comma...
Closer to the bottom.
Yes, closer on a Porsche, but, you know, cars are $20,000. So, you know, a cruise, you know, can easily be several thousand dollars these days. So the $2,500 cruise with $600 in taxes, that's, you know, sounds right to me.
Well, you pay the $600 in taxes.
Right.
So.
Well, you don't pay that $600 would not be taxable to you because you're paying the taxes. But the $2,500 in general, if it is just being given to get you to gamble and it's a marketing effort, you can attempt, and it's debatable, again, based on facts and circumstances, whether it will be taxable to you. But
well, it's actually the opposite. It's not to induce you to gamble. They say, for example, the stations, you know, if you earn chairman status, which is 300,000 coin in, we'll give you a free cruise.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, the same rule applies here. And sometimes in tax, we're trying to fit round objects into square boxes. And this is one of those cases. again, it's based on facts and circumstances. Stations, I doubt, issues 1099s for this. I have enough people who gamble through stations, and Caesars has a similar program,
yeah,
I'm aware
they
of.
They all do these days.
And no one gets a 1099. So the casinos consider these marketing gifts. They're an inducement for you to continue to gamble with them. And they consider this small enough value that they are taking the tax deduction for this. They're basically using on their books a marketing expense of $2,500. They're probably buying these in bulks a little less, but, you know, they're taking that. They justify that. Therefore, if they're writing this off, in general, you don't have to. And so the general rule then would be you're not going to include this on income. From a technical aspect, if you were audited and this came out, the IRS could add this to your income.
Okay, another interest about cruises. Assume you're a video poker professional, and because you had consumed too much of Nevada's now legal marijuana, you decided to go on a cruise ship to be professional at video poker. And lo and behold, you lose $4,000. And the casino is so grateful that you live in Nevada and do this that they give you another free cruise. Is any part of that $4,000 deductible? Is your actual losses rather than this daily amount?
Well, gambling losses are completely separate from business expenses. So when you have gambling losses, that's a $4,000 gambling loss. It doesn't matter if you gamble in a, you know, the Rio Hotel that I'm staring at through the window, or if you're gambling on a cruise ship. Gambling is gambling is gambling to the IRS. So you have a $4,000 gambling loss deductible against your gambling winnings.
Being the fact that it's in international waters when it happens?
Your U.S. taxes you on your worldwide income. Does not matter where you gamble, anywhere in the world is taxable if you win, and it's a gambling loss wherever you lose, period.
Very good. Moving on.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to add, I certainly wrote off my losses playing in casinos in foreign countries against my wins. I mean, that wouldn't make much sense to go there if you couldn't take your losses against your wins.
One of our listeners doesn't want to keep good records. Go figure. I'm sure you've never met anybody like this. He gets about $15,000 to $20,000 worth of W-2Gs a year. He doesn't keep the records, and he just claims that he loses more than that playing. He knows he's in trouble if he gets audited, but he believes the odds against him being audited for writing off that small amount W-2Gs are really low. Do you have any feel for whether or not he's correct?
Well, first, because I am licensed by the federal government, I have to state I strongly advise your listener to keep good records. Keep a gambling log. It's not brain surgery. As far as specific audit rates, I can't give them. These are dependent upon, are you a professional or an amateur? What is your other income? The more you make, the more likely you are to be audited. So the fact you have 15,000 to 20,000 of W-2Gs doesn't say anything. If his day income is $500,000, he's a lot more likely to be audited than his neighbor who makes $50,000. And that's common sense. However, he is right in one sense. The IRS's budget has been cut recently, primarily due to the IRS scandal related to nonprofit entities. But I will point out again, if this ever got into tax court or audit or appeals, the IRS nor the tax court would agree with the idea that he shouldn't be keeping records.
Yeah, it's just not that hard. I mean, you know, everybody has a phone. You can have Google Sheets on your phone and it's just not that tough.
But part of that depends on your personality.
True, yeah. I mean, yes, I certainly have had teammates who just are horrible at record keeping.
Different subject. What are the implications of giving a casino an address different from your physical address for a W-2G? For example, a post office box or a UPS store box. And maybe the mailing address is in a different state. than you physically live. Is there a problem tax-wise with this?
From an IRS or federal tax standpoint, it's irrelevant. The IRS just looks at names and social security numbers, so as long as your name and social match, the IRS doesn't care if your address on the return on the W-2G is Paris, France, or Paris, California, or Paris, Kentucky. They don't care. However, for state tax purposes, it's quite relevant. Some states now send out notices to individuals who receive tax paperwork where the address shows in that state and no return is filed. California's Franchise Tax Board is notorious in doing this. So we strongly recommend that if you're going to use a different address than your domicile or residence address, you choose a state that does not have a state income tax, so it becomes also irrelevant. Do not, if you can, choose California.
Yeah, often people want to appear to be a local, so they'll have a, if they're going to play in California, they'll have a local P.O. box, and if they're going to play in Missouri, they'll have a local P.O. box there. So, but yeah, so it's going to be a problem for them.
Absolutely, especially California. I don't know about Missouri and what they do, but states with state income taxes are getting nastier and nastier. The federal government can print money. The state of California cannot. And I've seen quite a few notices recently of clients who have moved from California and the 1099 paperwork hasn't been updated and they still get a 1099, which they download off the internet, that says they, you know, still live in California when they don't. And they still have to be responded to. So in California's presumption is the entire world lives in the state.
By the way, I've also had the situation where I received a letter from the IRS that said, we received a form that had this name on it with your social security number. Are you using another name? And I just responded and said, yes, that's me, and I'm declaring it, you know. And after that happened to me two or three times, I said, so how do I get this not to happen? And they said, only use one name with your social security number. So, you know, if you've changed your name, then change it on your tax form or just use whatever name that's on your tax form if you're doing tax paperwork.
When you change your name with the Social Security Administration, for example, you get married and you change your last name, Social Security eventually sends that to the IRS, and the IRS will update its records. Unfortunately, I have to use the word eventually. I have one case that's taken so far 2 years and counting and still hasn't been updated, even though the client has shown me her new Social Security card.
I've been married more than once and never changed my name. I don't understand. All right. But I digress.
You know, our listeners may not know this, but if you get married, you can just change your name without going through any legal process, whether you're man or woman, and you do not have to take your spouse's name. So, because I had a friend who considered getting married just so he could change his name rather than go through the legal process.
Uh-huh. Can you do it getting a divorce?
I don't know. Good question.
I'm actually sure. Maybe. I'm sure.
Women certainly can.
Women certainly can. They can go back to whatever they claim is their maiden name, whether it was their most recent maiden name or further back or something.
You can definitely change your name.
All right. In April of this year, President Trump unveiled what he called a tax plan, which was actually long on goals and very short on specifics. Whatever is eventually passed will certainly be very different from what that one page showed. With that said, how did the plan Trump unveiled appear to affect gamblers?
For professional gamblers, it's probably a net positive. Professional gamblers, in general, the plan appears to lower tax rates. So for professional gamblers overall, I think it's a slight positive. With the caveat, what he proposed and what comes out will probably be very, very different. For amateur gamblers, it is not good at all. The initial plan would eliminate most itemized deductions. gambling losses are an itemized deduction. So if the plan were to go through, that one-page bare-bones plan become law, amateur gamblers, as it is currently written, would no longer be able to deduct gambling losses. That would be very disastrous. However,
casinos would go out of business.
My understanding is there's also, from talking to my local representative, his tax person, if this gets proposed, he would propose a schedule, we'll call it a Schedule G, where you would net your gambling wins and losses, which would actually be a benefit. Now, again, nobody knows what's going to come out when you have major tax reform, but we are overdue for it. It typically happens about every 30 to 40 years. Last time was 1986, and the tax code has become, to put it bluntly, bloated.
You know, I want to go back to, I'm going to throw you a curveball because we didn't prepare for this question, but our talk about changing your name. I've heard rumor several times that there is a way to change your Social Security number. Do you know if that's possible?
I don't know.
Okay.
Remind me after the show, Richard. I have a list of questions for Bob Nersessian that we keep. And so next time Bob Nersessian is on, we throw him. And that sounds like an excellent question for him.
Right. He'll have time to research it before coming on.
Yeah. Well, yeah. If we had given this to Mr. Fox a week ago, he might have an answer.
Well, I just thought of it when we were talking about name changes.
So. Well, think faster next time.
Yeah.
Okay. Slot and video poker players complain that the W2G threshold of $1,200 has been unchanged for a number of years. That number has simply not kept up with inflation. Do you see any reasonable chance that that number is raised in the foreseeable future?
No. The last IRS proposal was to lower it to $600. There is no chance that the IRS will voluntarily increase that number.
Another of our listener wonders, well, complains is probably a better word, why he gets W2G at the track for a $600 jackpot. And it takes $1,200 to get one at the casino.
Well, way back when, in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, horse racing was the glamorous hobby. And the threshold was put very low because it was what people who earned too much money were doing. And that's the reason that it has a lower threshold. It's an older limit. There again, the IRS is never going to increase any of those numbers unless Congress forces it on them. So, because the IRS would like it on as of $1. In other words, every gambling transaction have a W-2G.
Well, also originally in the casino, a 300-to-1 payoff triggers, say on a table game, a 300-to-1 payoff triggers a W-2G or a 1099, something like that. So at the track, the base bet is $2, and $600 is 300-to-1 payoff. So, you know.
Yeah, that 300-to-1 is still in effect.
300-to-1 or 300-to-4-1? The example you gave, Richard.
It might be 300-to-4. Okay. I don't know. I'm sure the people behind the counter wouldn't know the difference either. I mean, most of them have no idea what the laws are, the rules.
At least 300 times the amount of the wager.
Yeah. So I guarantee you that because this has happened, I mean, I know people have had this argument in casinos several times where you bump up against the house maximum aggregate payoff and it's less than 300-to-1, but they're still insisting that they're going to give you the tax form anyway, even though legally they shouldn't. But you just can't win those arguments. Because for them, it's a cover your ass, when in doubt, fill out forms.
Well, it's also a reason we want to get this guy's ID.
Yeah, well, that too, yeah.
And so for players who play uncarded, that's 25-to-1. That's close enough. Where's your ID?
Yeah.
And so you just have to walk away and say, keep the jackpot, I'm leaving.
I hit a payoff at a casino, and did not have my Social Security card on me, which who carries their Social Security card around? And I had to go get a duplicate Social Security card because I was in Fresno, California, of all places. And so I had to stay there an extra few days and go get a duplicate Social Security card before they would give me the payoff.
The casino is supposed to accept Form W-9 where you sign that your Social Security number is whatever it is.
Yeah. They wouldn't.
All right. Right now, we're talking to Russell Fox, tax expert. We have lots more questions for him. Right now, we're taking a commercial break.
The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. Every week in July, Monday through Thursday, if you play 1,250 points in slots, reels, or video poker, you earn a copper gift. Red Copper brand. The pans are ceramic-infused copper. Earn all four of the gifts, three frying pans and one skillet, from July 31st to August 3rd. You can pick up a five-piece Red Copper square pan set for no extra play. In all cases, you keep the points. Mondays are Prime Mondays, where Prime is the name of their Sexy Seniors 50 Years and Older promotion. Includes a senior slot tournament, half-off dinner if you pay with points, $4 movies, and half-off bingo. The next semester of free video poker classes at the South Point will be on Wednesdays at noon between August 2nd and October 4th. The schedule is posted on bobdancer.com. If you're at least 21 years of age, you're welcome. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the games. The game of the week is 100 Play with Super Times Pay. Super Times Pay is a 6 coins per line game where approximately every 15 hands you get a multiplier between 2x and 10x, and you get that multiplier before the draw. There are no changes in strategy required, and the game adds about 0.25% to the total return. If the casino has the same pay schedules in Super Times Pay and regular video poker, with the extra 0.25%, Super Times Pay is always smarter play.
We're back talking to Russell Fox. One of our listeners wrote, in Florida, the Seminole casinos have a self-pay W2G, which patrons can choose to have jackpots downloaded directly to a machine and not receive a W2G form immediately. The casino says that the patron can ask for the forms by mail. I have two questions related to this option. First, if you get the W2Gs after the fact and some information is wrong, can you do anything to correct it?
Yes, you can. You go back to the casino and ask them and point out, hey, this is wrong. Maybe they have your Social Security number wrong, or maybe they have some of the jackpot information wrong. The casino is supposed to issue a corrected form W2G to you.
Okay, second question. What would be the implications if the casino refused to provide a copy of the W2Gs after the fact? This could come up if a casino 86 is a patron and doesn't respond to the request for a physical copy of the W2G form. Do they have any legal obligation to provide the forms no matter what?
In Nevada, the answer is yes. If you're at a Nevada casino, they still must provide the paperwork. It is a federal law. And so if, for example, you win a jackpot at a casino and you are then 86 from the casino, the casino is still supposed to send you that W-2G. However, the example given here was in Florida at a Seminole or Indian Gaming casino. The Indian Gaming, there usually is a gaming commission, but it's really basically the same people who run the casino. Therefore, your chances of getting it through the casino or the gaming commission complaining to them is slim to none. But there is a method available. You can always obtain what is called a wage and income transcript from the IRS. They're available roughly in May, although they're not guaranteed to be 100% accurate till the end of the year. They're available in May, for example, 2017 for calendar year 2016. Wage and income transcript will show all W-2Gs issued and anything else issued, all 1099s, W-2s, etc., for your name and social security number. And you can request this on the IRS's website, irs.gov, by doing a search for Get Transcript. And just choose wage and income transcript for that year. One last thing, if you do receive an incorrect W-2G or any other tax paperwork, I did write a little article that you can read about what to do when you get bad paperwork and the place will not correct it. And it's at bit.ly/wrong1099.
Is this on taxable table talk? What was that?
Taxable talk. It is onto the Taxable Talk website, but the URL for that runs about 45 characters, so I did a short URL, which is a lot less.
Uh-huh. Okay, we have a question of a guy who plays electronic table games, wants to know about W-2Gs. He says he's played three different electronic craps machines with three different W-2G amounts on wins, including wins of the wager over $1,200. If it makes any difference, physical dice were involved in all three outcomes. First of all, at a casino in Las Vegas, the machine locked up and he was given W-2G for a win, including the return of my wager of just over $1,200. In a northern Nevada casino, he accidentally placed enough money into action to have a payout, again including the return of the wager, for $1,300. The machine didn't lock up at all or call an attendant. It just put the credits on his balance and the game continued. At a different northern Nevada casino, a win, including the return of the bet of just over $1,200, resulted in the payout showing up in the computer as a W-2G win, but the supervisor came over, whipped out his calculator, and upon seeing that my actual net win, not including my wager, was nowhere near $1,200, overrode the W-2G determination the computer had made and simply did a hand pay without the W-2G. So, what is the actual rule on this?
The actual rule about W-2Gs, I went and grabbed the instructions for W-2Gs, are: report gambling winnings on it if the winnings not reduced by the wager are $1,200 or more from a bingo game or slot machine, $1,500 reduced by the wager from Keno, and $5,000 from a poker tournament if reduced by the wager or buy-in. Most of the electronic table game machines are classified as slot machines in Nevada. Some states do not classify them as slot machines. Depends state by state. But in Nevada, as best as I can tell, all three of these hypotheticals or actual occurrences should have had a W-2G issued. It is not reduced by the wager because these are slot machines.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you go play a craps machine here and bet $600 in the field and win the bet, that's $1,200, you get a W-2G. So, yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous, but that is what happens. I mean, that assuming you could find a craps machine that'll allow you to bet $600 in the field, but yeah, that is what happens. They count your bet as part of the payoff, and you can just generate W-2Gs like crazy if you don't understand what you're, you know, doing.
Yeah.
I have my own history with this on video poker. Back in 1998, when triple play machines first came into being, both the Gold Coast and the Orleans had triple play dollar double bonus machines. They're both owned by Michael Gaughan, now owner of the South Point. On that game, four deuces, four threes, or four fours paid $400. So if one of these quads were dealt, the jackpot would be exactly $1,200. You would only win $1,185 because it took $15 to play the hand. So there was a discussion if this really qualified as a $1,200 win. While it's only round numbers, 1 in 18,000 that your next hand is going to be one of these three quads dealt, When there are several machines and they're played heavily, it happens regularly. The Gold Coast gave you W2G from day one. The Orleans didn't. Same owner, different slot directors. After a few months, Orleans started issuing W2Gs on this hand. I suspect that's what's happening here. It's rare that these craps machines get W2Gs and the departments aren't sure what to do. But relatively soon, they'll figure it out that they're just like video poker machines tax-wise, and you'll get the W2G for all $1,200 jackpots.
And I agree. I think it's just a matter of time. And it's also the same issue which runs in, you know, with one of the earlier questions, should the threshold be raised? Absolutely. I mean, it should be adjusted for inflation. But again, the IRS will not do that unless Congress orders it to.
And Congress cooperates so well with itself that we...
Well, I mean, the real issue is, are there powerful enough lobbyists who want it done? And, you know, the casinos, if they had the power of the banking industry, it would be done.
Well, you tend to tax other people's vices. If I were a non-drinker, I wouldn't mind so much if the tax on alcohol were raised. Or if I were a non-smoker, you can tax cigarettes all you want. A lot of people are non-gamblers or claim to be non-gamblers, so it's easy for them to take the attitude of let those sinful gamblers pay their share. And so, and in fact, a lot of players want the W2G limit raised so that they don't have to report their income fairly. That's the reason they want it raised.
The casino industry would like it raised because it's a pain in the neck for them, and every time it happens, it costs them time, which is money, and if they were more powerful, things would change.
When the IRS made the proposal last year to lower it to $600, the IRS was not aware how much manual work was involved in issuing a W-2G. And the IRS requested comments, and they got a lot of them from the casino industry basically saying, you folks just don't understand that it's not just issuing a piece of paper. We have to have a human being write this out, look at ID, et cetera, et cetera. And it is time-consuming and expensive. And unanimously, both Democrats and Republicans of Nevada in Congress asked for the law to not, for this regulation to have not a lowering but an increase, as did the casino industry. The IRS, of course, just left it the same.
Russell Fox, you have a tax blog found at taxtabletalk.com. There's a whole lot of solid tax advice provided.
I'm sorry, wait. It's Taxable Talk, not Tax Table Talk.
Yes,
right?
It's taxabletalk.com.
Did I say it wrong?
Yes.
Tax Table Talk would be okay. Have you considered another blog?
One is enough.
Okay. Now, there's a whole lot of solid tax advice under, you have several articles called Bozo Tips. Although you give Bozo the Clown no credit whatsoever for stealing his name. We have about 10 minutes. Without going through all of the Bozo Tips, please share a few of them with us.
Okay. Well, I grew up in Chicago where Bozo the Clown was a fixture on local television. So with that, and also one of my other favorite websites, the Bozo Criminal of the Day, which you just cannot believe some of the things on there. Some of these are actually somewhat serious. First, a non-serious one. Do not publicize your tax crimes on social media. The IRS criminal investigation does read Facebook. So does the police department. If you publicize that you just robbed the First National Bank on Facebook, there's a chance your local police department might notice it, or one of your neighbors might forward it on to the police department. And if you really did rob the bank, that's not a brilliant idea. Yet every year people do these stupid things, and every year they get caught. And
even if you didn't rob the bank, your life is not going to be pleasant over the next few weeks if you did that.
No, and in Florida there was an identity thief who basically did a post on Facebook saying, my name is whatever, and I have stolen millions of dollars. and she waved around $10,000 bricks, cash, and said, "You are not going to catch me." She is currently doing 21 years in federal prison.
Seems she was wrong.
Second one is somewhat serious. Do not email your social security number. Email is not secure. When you send an email, as it was explained to me by tech geeks who understand this better than I do, emails go from device to device and are in the clear in general, so they can be intercepted anywhere en route. In these days of identity theft, you do not want your social security number known to anyone but yourself and your family, not to some random people. So don't email social security numbers. Most tax professionals use a web portal or a client server where people can upload information securely and not via email. Or use mail. Fax is more secure. Fax is analog. It's harder to intercept. Mail is considered secure. Theft of mail, which unfortunately is somewhat rampant in Las Vegas, is dealt with, you know, that is a federal offense and is dealt with, if you get caught, pretty severely.
On a related note, Bonnie was having to go to a new doctor recently, and they have a patient form to fill out as to who are you. And one of the things this doctor asked for was her social security number. And I could see no reason for that, so I left it blank with no ramifications whatsoever.
That for years, that was just like colleges. That's how they identify their patients, is social security number. Colleges do the same thing. But a number of years ago, the medical industry realized if you refuse to give them your social, they don't squawk about it anymore. As long as you have your insurance card and that kind of stuff. So
today, basically, you do not give out your social security number like you did when I was in school.
We used to put it on our checks.
Yeah.
And 20 years ago, my social security number was on my checks.
Wow. Until
somebody convinced me what an idiot I was, and I rolled over and said guilty.
Yeah. One that happens every year, cash isn't taxable. It does not matter how you, for example, how you earn your living. If you get paid in cash, it's just as taxable as checks. It's just as taxable as bitcoins. Bitcoins are taxable. It doesn't matter how you get paid. If you get paid and it is for, and it would normally be considered income, it's income.
Okay. Now you're talking as a federally licensed person. If there's no record of it, there's a difference between being taxed or being paid where there's a record of it that the IRS can get to, and you being paid where there is no such record.
Well, let me give you an example. It happened now a decade ago. A kid was playing poker online back when you could do so anywhere in the U.S., and he played enough where he earned a free Porsche from the site he was playing on, and the site went to called up his local Porsche dealer, told him your Porsche will be ready, and he got his Porsche. And he also then said, well, you know, I might as well have a nice house rather than living at my mom and dad's. So he took $300,000 and went over, got a realtor, had $300,000 in cash, and where he lived, you know, in the middle of Ohio, $150,000, bought a nice house.
Wait, how did he get the money in cash?
He deposited this money into his bank account and just withdrew it.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay. We're not, again, bozo. Okay, you did say that. So, and, yeah, needless to say, when the cash transaction report went in, the currency transaction report, IRS wondered how somebody who had no income had a Porsche and bought a house. That did not end so well for this gentleman.
Yeah, I have a friend who's a bozo, and now this is going back, you know, 20 or 25 years. He was playing a lot in foreign countries. So he would leave, you know, he was very honest. He would leave the country and he would say, I'm leaving with $30,000. And he would come back and he would say, I'm entering the country with $50,000. And, you know, he did this a dozen times in the space of a year. And then he declared that he earned $15,000 that year. And the IRS thought that was odd, that he would have all this cash going in and out of the country, but only earn $15,000.
Yeah, it is always a lot easier just to pay your taxes. IRS, by the way, has...
It's also a lot more expensive.
It is, but the IRS now has a strategy. This is another bozo item. People put their businesses up for sale. A lot of people, you know, will lie on their books. I know, unheard of. But they'll have one set of books that will show what they are paying taxes on. They'll have another set of books that show the actual profit that they take in cash. The IRS has gotten the strategy that they send undercover IRS criminal investigators in and shop businesses for sale and see if the owner is stupid enough to say, well, yeah, you know, our tax returns only show $100,000 of profit this year, but here are real books. And they show $200,000. And the IRS has gotten plenty of convictions on cases like this. So this is, unfortunately, a very common bozo strategy where two sets of books are not really better than one.
Now, casinos are largely a cash business. So what you win, you're usually paid in cash. And there are a number of gamblers who have a safe or safety deposit boxes somewhere with however much money is in there, depending on how big a gambler. It could be a million, it could be $5,000, whatever it is. And so as there, it goes up and down, it comes from this slush fund rather than putting it into a bank where all the banks in and out is closely monitored. Is this bozo thing to do?
Well, again, my suggestion is just declare your income every year. If you want to have a safe where you keep money, there's nothing at all wrong with that, nothing illegal about that. In an audit, one of the questions on every single audit is, do you have any safes or safety deposit boxes or any other kinds of accounts where you keep money besides bank accounts? And that is a mandatory question for every single audit. And because, and mind you, lying to an IRS employee is a felony. So you either tell the truth or you don't. And so, again, my advice is just, you know, declare your income. It's a lot easier.
Or you change it before the audit.
As he said, having cash, there's nothing illegal about having cash as long as you've declared your income. And banks, I don't know if it's a law, but it's certainly a rule at banks that you are not supposed to keep cash in a safety deposit box. And I have friends who have had their bank accounts shut because they went to their safety deposit box too often, and the bank decided that it was because they were putting cash in and out of the safety deposit box. So I would not recommend making large withdrawals and deposits many times because many banks are barring customers for that now. So if you are a professional gambler that deals in cash, you need to have cash available to do your job. So as long as you're declaring what you earn,
You should be fine. Yeah, there's absolutely nothing illegal about having cash. One thing that is illegal is structuring your bank deposits. If you have, for example, you walk into a casino and win $20,000 in cash, go hog wild and deposit it all in your bank. Do not split it into three deposits of $7,000. That is a felony. It's structuring.
I actually make a habit of making several transactions a year, specifically over $10,000, so that I have a record of being someone that has those cash transactions filed, so that if ever someone does try to claim that I'm structuring, I can say, look, I do this. Obviously, I'm not afraid of CTRs.
Okay, one last one is, do not let an IRS notice age like fine wine.
Uh-huh.
Okay, IRS notices have deadlines. Typically, they're anywhere from 5 days, which is rare, to most of them are 30 days. You can usually get one extension to respond if you need more time. Respond timely. Unfortunately, that doesn't mean the IRS will respond quickly to your response. The average response time now of the IRS is 13 weeks, but you are still required to respond timely. If you respond timely, it stops the IRS, and they actually have to read your letter. So don't let an IRS notice age. It does not get better with time.
But sometimes your response can be delaying, such as, I have your letter, I understand what you say, I'm looking into it.
Well, in that case, you need more time to respond. That's not a proper response. So if, for example, like I had a client receive a notice and he literally needs to have records sent to him from a bank, which are going to take 2 to 3 weeks, just called the IRS up, got a 30-day extension, and in a couple of weeks we'll send the response. Because we can't respond because we don't know if the IRS is correct or not.
The last time you were on the air, you suggested using the email address rcfox@claytontax.com. Is that still the best address?
It is.
Okay, so if you need your taxes done, there you can either email Russell or go to his website, which is
claytontax.com.
There you go.
And even if it isn't Tax Table Talk, it is still a good blog with lots of good information on there.
Taxabletalk.com.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.